Psalm 46. We want to really just take a synopsis, a bird's eye view of this psalm. We'll obviously not look at every verse in detail. But Psalm 46 and verse 1, we simply read, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Martin Luther, of course, was a key figure in the Protestant Reformation. He was born in Germany and he was ordained a priest in 1507. Now, after his conversion, he began to lecture in the University of Wittenberg. And of course, his main theme was the just shall live by faith, as we find it in Romans chapter 1. Of course, we know that in 1517, he had his great battle at the Diet of Worms. And after that, he was persecuted and ostracized. Now, really, what followed the Diet of Worms, 1517, was 10 long, 10 hard, 10 difficult, and 10 very, very bleak years in the life of Martin Luther. And really, if you study his life in any great detail, you'll discover that in 1527, 10 years after that, it all kind of came to a halt. It all kind of came together. And he had a most difficult year of his life. Really, at the beginning of that year, in the 22nd of April, whilst he was preaching a message, there was a dizzy spell came upon him and he was actually forced to stop preaching. It gradually got worse and come the summertime, he found a constant acute buzzing in his ear. It happened whilst he was eating with his friends. It got worse and worse and worse, and actually got to the point where he thought that he was going to pass away. It was so difficult. Now, he didn't pass away. He did regain partial strength, but this really discouraged him. He began to doubt. He began to worry. He began even to question, have I really still a work to do for the Lord in the work of the Reformation? His health problems continued. He suffered from heart difficulties, from intestinal problems as well. And then following all of this, around this time, the dreaded Black Plague reached Germany. It spread to Wittenberg, of course, where he was living at this time. And by this stage, he had one little boy called Hans. And his wife, Katie, she was expecting with their second. There were many leaving Wittenberg. As I'm sure you can imagine, they were fearful for their lives, fearful for the real possibility of dying. But Martin Luther and Katie, in spite of all they were going through themselves, they stayed. They were absolutely convicted that God had called them to stay and be a help to those who were in desperate need. They really turned their home into a hospital ward to care for the sick and dying. Now, watching his family suffer, watching his friends, many of them pass away, and as a result of reading this psalm, Psalm 46, Martin Luther then penned really that tremendous anthem that became the anthem of the Protestant Reformation, a mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing. And in this psalm, you are confronted by another reformer, King Hezekiah. He was really a reformer of true religion. And you're confronted by a man who had his difficulties, who had his problems. And yet, in spite of this, he was able to write in verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Like Martin Luther, as Martin Luther found in the Lord, one who was a mighty fortress, one who was a bulwark never failing, he saw in the Lord someone who was a rock, someone who was a source of strength, someone who was a solace at time of trouble. What was Hezekiah going through as he wrote this psalm? Well, you really read of the backdrop of this psalm in 2 Kings 18 and 2 Kings 19. At that time, there was a king who really ruled most of the then known world, King Sennacherib. He was the king of the Assyrians, and he had come and he had taken the vast majority of the north of Israel. The northern 10 tribes of Israel, the Assyrians, they had come and they had taken over all of that territory. Now, Hezekiah was the king of the south of Israel. He was really the king of Judah, and he ruled and reigned from Jerusalem. His palace was there in Jerusalem. And so here's King Hezekiah, and he sees his compatriots. He sees his many of those whom he would have known, or at least known of. He sees the vast majority of Israel being handed over to the enemy. And now he's thinking to himself, well, what's next for me? As Sennacherib has taken much of Israel already, surely he will come and take Jerusalem, take Judah as well. Now this was a very, very real threat then to this king. King Sennacherib himself, you read in 2 Kings 18 and 19 that he actually wrote a letter to Hezekiah, and he told him, we're coming really to get you. And King Hezekiah, in those chapters, what does he do? He takes this letter, he comes to the house of God, the temple. And we read it that he spreads this letter before the Lord in prayer. He brings the need before the Lord. And in 2 Kings 19, God wonderfully answers his prayer. He sends an angel, and that angel, he slays 185,000 of the soldiers of the Assyrian army. And in 2 Kings 19, verse 35, we simply read they were all as dead corpses. And so, here's the Lord. He has delivered his people. He has delivered Hezekiah from this imminent threat. And in response to the intervention of God, in response to all that he has come through, all that he has taken him through, what does Hezekiah say? Psalm 46, verse 1, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. He wrote this psalm, he penned this psalm to commemorate the goodness of God in difficult times. And in these seasons of instability, our God is a God of stability. He is a refuge and strength, a bulwark never failing. You feel like Martin Luther today? Feel like King Hezekiah? And you say, all around me, it's collapsing. You look at the next few weeks and what they will hold for you, and there are worries there. There are dreads there. You perhaps look ahead and there is that trepidation. What is going to happen? What am I going to do? Well, you can come to this psalm like Martin Luther did and like King Hezekiah did at a very, very real time of trouble and thank the Lord that you can say, God is our refuge. God is my refuge and strength. A very present help in trouble. I want to encourage you today. The Lord wants to encourage you today through this psalm by looking really at God, our mighty fortress. God, our mighty fortress. I've broken this psalm up into three parts really for you. The first thought I want to leave with you is God for us, his protection. God for us, his protection. In the first three verses really of this psalm, God is presented as one who is a protector of the psalmist. One who comes alongside and one who protects him at a very, very difficult time. Verse 1, you read, God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. Here, Hezekiah, he states that God, not other people, not other resources, the Lord God, God alone, is my refuge and strength. Now, the name he uses for God is very, very interesting. There are different names for God in the Bible, but the name he uses here is Elohim. You actually read of this in the first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 1, where you read that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There is the thought there of God being mighty, God being strong. There's the thought there of God creating this world from absolutely nothing and the heavens as well. And this same God, Hezekiah, he states, this God, the mighty God, the strong God, the creator God, the one who made the heavens and the earth, he is my refuge and strength. Now he calls the Lord a refuge. What is a refuge? Refuge in the Hebrew was really refers to a quiet place that one would go to in a time of trouble. Maybe Hezekiah is thinking of a particular tower there around the city of Jerusalem. They would have had lookout towers around that city, watching for the enemy. Maybe he's thinking about a tower, and he states that just as I would have went there, a quiet place, a place of solace, God, he is like that. He is my tower. He is a refuge. Maybe, perhaps it also refers to a high place above a wall, maybe a quiet room. Hezekiah would have had many of those in the palace. And here then is the thought of Hezekiah as he thinks about these things in the natural realm. He states that the Lord's like that. He is someone who I could retort to whenever there was difficulty coming. A refuge. The word trouble here is interesting as well in this verse. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. It really has the idea of a tight place. Tight place. And we would speak in those terms today. Say, well, I'm in a tight place here. I'm in a fix. And that's very much the thought. You imagine Hezekiah. You're the king at this time. And you see the Assyrians, they're coming. Perhaps you hear them outside the very walls of the city. And in a very real sense, he would have felt the walls closing in upon him. He's in a real tight spot. And yet at such a time, a tight place, when he received this threatening letter, when he was worried, when there were doubts, when there were fears, he looks up and he states that the Lord was someone who he could run to, someone who he could find strength. He was an ever-present, very present help. He was a refuge in times of trouble. You see, God is not merely alongside his people. God, he is actually over his people. He is a refuge for you in times of trouble. And there are times in all of our lives, and perhaps you're there this morning, we say I'm in a tight spot. And you look at all of the circumstances, and you look at all of the difficulties that the next few weeks will bring to you. Perhaps you're worried about the thoughts of what maybe you've gone through in recent days. And you see all of these varying troubles, these varying trials. You see the problems, you see the hitches, you see the hindrances. And yet this morning, you need not focus upon them, just like Hezekiah didn't. You can look up and you can say, God is my refuge, my refuge. He is that tower, as it were. He is that person who I could retort to, that in a quiet place. He is that shelter, that hiding place, watching over you, watching over your circumstances, watching over all of the things that you worry about. He is there as a refuge you can go to at any time. Notice how it's described here. A very present help. Just when you need him, he's there. Just at that very moment when faith is weak and faith is waning and faith is waxing, you can say that God is my refuge and strength. There's even a further allusion to this in verses 2 and 3 of an all-protecting God. We read there, therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. And here the reference to the waters, it's a reference really to the waves, the crashing waves. The thought of a storm, really. And here's Hezekiah, and he sees the storm a-coming. And yet God, he was a refuge to him. The word earth, really, in verse 2, it could be understood as the land. And the term in verse 2, removed, it could be understood as changing hands. So you could understand it this way. Though the earth or the land, it is changing hands. Though this very thing is happening, God is my refuge. And you think about the context of this. He, in a very real way, was worried about the changing of hands in terms of Jerusalem. Another king coming in and taking his place, taking his position, taking his very people from him. Though the land change hands, God is my refuge. God is my strength. He was that permanent, that refuge, that source of strength for him. And yes, you look ahead and you see that there is a changing of the hands. Circumstances are changing all the time. In this ever-changing world, it is changing faster now than it has ever done. And you see this. You see this in society. There are things happening. There are hands changing all the time. The goalposts are being moved all the time. And yet, in this changing, this ever-changing world, you can say that God is my refuge and strength. He is one who is protecting me. He is one who is generally looking out for the good of his people. And so I need not fear. Again, Psalm 121, we read in verses 3 and 4, he will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will neither slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. Naturally, the thought of Psalm 121, there is one in the heavens who does not sleep, who does not slumber. He is everywhere watching over his people. You see, as God is powerful, he then shows that power in the protection of his people. And this morning, you can look up and you can say that I have a mighty fortress who is watching over me, protecting me, looking after me every step of the way. The days of World War II, during the bombing of London, every night families would leave their homes and they would go searching for missing loved ones, for perhaps those they had concern for, as you would, as you can imagine. And there was one family in particular, and they were seriously worried about their little grandmother that stayed with them. And they went out and they searched through the streets, searched everywhere. Couldn't find her. They came home, went upstairs, checked in her bedroom, and there she was, sound asleep. Whenever they found her, they immediately woke her up and they said, "How on earth, Granny, could you sleep with all of the bombing going on?" And she simply said, "Well, it says in the Bible, he that keepeth thee shall neither slumber nor sleep. I figured there was no need for both of us to stay awake, and so I went to bed." You ever had an experience like that? Where you're passing, or you are worried about problems, worried about children, worried about family, worried about illness. You've paced the floor at night. This morning you need to realize this, that God both works the day shift, but he also works the night shift. He is never off duty. And he protects you every step of the way then. So here is the first thought in this psalm. God for us, his protection. I want you then to see, secondly, not only God for us, his protection, God with us, his presence. In verses 4 through 7, there is really the thought of God being with Hezekiah through all of this, through the Assyrians coming, through the Assyrians attempting to take this city. There is the thought of God being with him. Verses 4 and 5, we read, there is a river. The streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her in that right early. I don't know about you, but have you ever thought about this verse, verse 4 particularly, and thought, why on earth, after speaking about God being a refuge and so on, why is there a reference to a river running through the midst of the city or the people of God and making her glad? Well, really, the reference here to the river is the reference to a river or a spring in Gihon, which was located just outside the Kidron Valley in Jerusalem. Remember, they're in lockdown now. The city's in lockdown. They can't get out. But there was this old source or supply of water just outside the city. Now it was exposed to the enemy. And the enemy, there was a very real threat of them finding this source of water and stopping it. And really starving out the people from Jerusalem. But Hezekiah, what did he do? Well, history records that he constructed an 1,800-foot-long conduit into a reservoir. He reservoired that water into the very midst of the city. He was able to do it underground so that it was hidden from the enemy. And as verse 4 states, it would most certainly make glad the city of God. Here were the people of God inside. And whilst they hadn't many things, yet they had that constant flow, that constant supply of clean water. And the enemy didn't know about it. And this is what he means here. He speaks of this source of water constantly sustaining, constantly supplying himself, the people, inside this city. And just as this river was a constant flow to the people in the midst of that city, I believe this morning you have a picture of the Holy Spirit for you, the child of God. Think about the details of this river. Its flow was constant. It didn't matter what happened, as long as the enemy didn't find that source, that conduit, and stop up that pipe, really, then this water would constantly flow to the people. It's the same with the Spirit of God. Oh yes, there are things, and they at times can block up the flow, as it were, of the water. Things come, they clog up that flow. But in a very real sense, child of God, you have the water of the Spirit of God within you, flowing to the very city of your heart. And as this water was the physical secret of the people of God's strength, so you spiritually have a secret within you, if you would but tap into and unleash its power. The Spirit of God. And oh, God is promising you today that not only is He watching over you, but He's with you. He is with you. He is with you in all that you face. He is with you in all of the times where you feel as though the walls are crashing in. Those times of trouble. There is the Spirit of God constantly and continually flowing to your heart, revitalizing and fortifying you. I believe there's a reference then to this in verse 5. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. Verse 7. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And here is, as he is now writing this psalm, as he is taking time to reflect, he could say that as this water came, the Lord was in the midst of us. O Sennacherib, he was outside trying to get in, but we had the Spirit of God amongst us, dealing with all of the challenges, dealing with all of the physical challenges that being starved out of their city would have presented itself with. And we know all about that in this city and its history. You imagine it happening in Jerusalem. And the enemy, they're outside and they're trying to get in. And yet there was this water supplying them. You could say, Hezekiah could say, God was in the midst of us. Verse 7, the Lord of hosts is with us. Really, it refers to the Lord of armies. It's a picture of God going to war with His people. And yes, you look ahead. You see battles. Maybe you even worry about wars this Christmas. And yet in a very real sense, you can say the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies, the Lord of battles, He is with me. You can say that the Lord is in the very midst of me. Even in verse 7, that phrase there is with us. In the Hebrew, it reads Emmanuel. It's where we get the thought of God being Emmanuel, God with us. That's what we remember at this time of year, isn't it? Jesus Christ, God Himself, being Emmanuel, that's one of the names of Christ, God with us. And you could take this psalm, and you could call it the Emmanuel psalm. And you can take even that very thought this Christmas time. You remember nothing else about what I say today. Remember this. You have the Emmanuel with you this Christmas. Emmanuel, God's with me. Yes, though the mountains shake. Yes, though there are the storms. The Lord is with me by His Spirit in my heart. 2 Corinthians 4:16 speaks of the inner man being renewed day by day. Speaks there of the outer man perishing. Outward circumstances not getting any better. But the inward man is renewed, strengthened day by day. And oh yes, without there is discouragement. But within today, you have strength. You can say that the Lord's with me. Just as this river was flowing through the city of God. And as it says in verse 4, it made glad the people. Made glad the city of God. You can know real joy. Real gladness. This time of year, where there will be sorrow undoubtedly, and there will be difficulty undoubtedly, you can say that the Lord makes me glad. And you can know His gladness through the Spirit of God coming, giving you comfort, giving you protection, giving you just that strength that you need when you feel that you have no strength yourself. Mary Slezer was born and raised in Dundee. She was raised by a drunk. And she was sent out to work aged just 11. She worked in the mills in Dundee. She was saved early in life, and in her young 20s, she felt the call of God to go to Africa. But there was really nobody to look after her brothers and sisters at home, and so she stayed at home for a while. But her brothers and sisters, they then got up a little bit older, and eventually she felt then that she must go to Africa. The circumstances really were that David Livingstone had passed away. He had blazed a trail for the Lord in Africa, and this really challenged Mary Slessor. And so she felt the time to go was now. But at that time, there was a lot of ridicule in terms of women and ladies in the service of God. And there were many in church, and they were even coming to Mary and saying, look, your place is at home. You shouldn't be going. And there was all of this difficulty, all of this discouragement. But nonetheless, she went. Whenever she reached Africa, she came to minister and bring the gospel to those people. And she came to this tribe, and the chief of that tribe said to her, why are you doing all of this? Why are you going through all of this? Why, you're only a woman. And that little Scottish girl from Dundee, she looked back at that chief and she said, yes, but you have forgotten this woman's God. You have forgotten this woman's God. Mary Slessor had captured the vision of Hezekiah here. And here was the Lord with her as she went to Africa. And you need to capture this vision this morning of Hezekiah, that Hezekiah saw. That thought that God is with you. God is for you in the midst of everything. God for us, his protection. God with us, his presence. Lastly, I want you to see God through us, his power. God through us, his power. There's now a shift from the protection and presence of God to the power of God at the end of this psalm. And in verses 8 and 9, we read, come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow, cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in the fire. Remember that this psalm was written after the battle. It was written after the Lord had given victory. It was written after the Lord had sent his angel, and that angel had smitten 180,000 soldiers from Assyria. And it's as if Hezekiah is inviting the rest of the people of God in Jerusalem and Judah at large. And he's saying, come and let's look at the work of God. It's as if he's inviting them to view the battle site after battle and say, come and look what the Lord has done. That's what general reference there, verse 8. Behold the works of the Lord, what desolations he hath made. Come and look at the works of God, what he has done. But verse 9, he gets a little bit more specific. He makes wars to cease. He breaks the bow, cuts the spear, burns the chariot in the fire. Here is a reference to all of their implements of war. And now they are not use. They are useless. They are not at use. And he's really saying that God has, through prayer, through Hezekiah bringing this need to the Lord, he has made the war to cease. He has cut the spears. He has rendered them ineffectual. He is saying, behold your mighty, powerful God working through you. And then there is really a call in these last few verses for them to take that with them into the future. That's really what he's getting at here. Behold what God has done in the present and take that with you into future difficulty. And a consideration of the past gives you comfort for the present. It helps you deal with present and possible future calamities. And that's really what we're doing in this psalm, and that's really what you need to do with this psalm today. Look back and say, the Lord's been with me in the past. And you can think of in times and gone by in your life where the Lord has really come down, and he has really got you out of that tight place, that fix. He has proven himself to be a refuge and strength, a very present help in times of trouble. He has worked through you. He has revealed his power through you. He has been the Lord of hosts with you and for you in the past. And as he has made those wars and battles to cease in verse 9, so he will do in coming days. There is really that thought here that as he has done it in the past, he will protect you and show his power in the future. That's why in verse 10 you read, be still and know that I am God. We all know that verse, or many of us know that verse. Think about the context here. Here's Hezekiah, and he's bringing it all just to a conclusion. I'm going to take time to be still. I thought there, be still. It's used in Ezekiel of the angels, and they stop, they cease flapping their wings. There's the thought of cessation from all activity. And that's really what he's saying here. I'm ceasing now from all my activity. I am being still and contemplating upon the one, thinking about this one who has been my refuge, who has been with me, who has provided his presence. And I'm going to take that with me. This is the secret to success. For those of you who perhaps are worried, you're fearful, you're anxious about this next month, really, it's to be still and think about the one who is your refuge and strength. Postman once told of a friend of how empowered he felt working for the government. He said, all the resources of this government, they are pledged to support me in carrying out my work. He said, if there was but one postcard in my bag of mail, no one dare hinder its delivery. For all federal powers bid be thrown into action, if necessary, to secure the safe delivery of that postcard. And this morning, you have all of the eternal and supernal powers at your side, working all things out for your ultimate good. You have a God for you, a God with you, and a God working through you. Encourage your heart in your mighty fortress today. During the midst of all of the Reformation battles, Martin Luther would often come to Philip Melanchthon, his friend and his assistant, and he would often say to him, come, Philip, let us sing the 46th together, 46th Psalm. And he would make him think of God as his mighty fortress amidst all of his battles. May the Lord bless you then to this end through this psalm this morning. Amen.